Denying extremists a safe place may be the best way to close off the pipelines of recruitment and funding for terrorist organizations. This week, President Obama declared that with the proper resolve, the international community has more than sufficient means to deny sanctuary to extremists everywhere on the planet.
Resolutions alone will not be enough. Promises on paper cannot keep us safe. Lofty rhetoric and good intentions will not stop a single terrorist attack. The words spoken here today must be matched and translated into action, into deeds, concrete action within nations and between them, not just in the days ahead, but for years to come.
President Obama speaking at the United Nations. One potentially concrete action came from more than 100 Muslim clerics from around the world who have issued a letter in classical Arabic addressed to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the purported leader of the Islamic State headquartered in Raqqa, Syria. The so-called Islamic State is not a state and does not represent anything that is Islamic, said one of the leaders, Usama Jamal, Secretary General of the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations. None of their actions pass any litmus test to show that they have a sound understanding of Islamic ideas. There is no sanction in Islam for ISIS, these clerics have declared. At the United Nations, President Obama's first concrete action to use global cooperation against ISIS and other extremist groups is to appeal to the Security Council to give the call to isolate terrorists the force of international law. In a rare personal appearance at the Security Council for a U.S. president, President Obama's argument won the day. The Security Council passed a resolution 15-0, noting how in the past some notable Security Council resolutions have been flagrantly ignored by nations and parties singled out for sanctions. We welcome Alexander Evans, the coordinator of the United Nations Security Council Sanctions Monitoring Team. He's also called the expert at the UN Security Council on Al-Qaeda. Alexander Evans, thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about enforcement and what it is that you do particularly. Does that resolution have some force of law as a result of the 15-0 vote? And are you mobilized in some way to take action?
It does indeed. So this resolution, along with a series of Security Council resolutions back to 1999, set out under Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter an obligation on all member states of the United Nations to enforce sanctions against al-Qaeda and associates.
Now, in the case of making it illegal to join such an organization, how would you determine that? How would you detect that that is in fact the case? How would you create a list of people who are to be targeted or arrested or I don't know what?
So let's separate out three things. On the one hand, you've got a list of groups linked to al-Qaeda that are formally identified and put on a United Nations Security Council sanctions list. At a second level, you have a range of individuals, key individuals, who are also on that list associated with these groups. But that, of course, means that for enforcement, you're still talking about member states. And that's the third dimension, and it's a crucial dimension, that as we heard earlier, it's not so much the rhetoric or the language around a Security Council resolution, it's the obligation that that places on member states, and then crucially, it's how member states actually implement that on the ground.
And since you've been in business for a while dealing with al-Qaeda, right, al-Baghdadi, I'm presuming, because of his association with al-Qaeda, would have been a persona non grata, subject to arrest in virtually any member country already before this resolution passed?
Well, the subject to arrest piece depends on national arrest warrants. The crucial thing is Baghdadi is also on the sanctions list. Now, that means you can't give him money. It means you can't let him cross an international border. You can't help him in any way in activity that relates to terrorism. Now, that's all good and well, but you know, you're often talking about individuals who may not have a bank account, who may not take a plane from one country to another. So the aim of the targeted sanctions from the United Nations side are also to really focus on some of the key facilitators and intermediaries, the people who are recruiting foreign terrorist fighters in Europe, the people who are providing finance to groups. And so if you like, it's the accountants and facilitators and helpers of these groups that are as important to target as the leaders of the groups themselves.
Interesting. One last thing, and this may be, you know, out of your sphere of expertise here, but, you know, ISIS controls territory on the ground. It's not a state. It's a part of a state. Syria, it's a part of a state. Iraq. Is there any way for the United Nations to extend its enforcement into territory that might be recognized nationally, but is in a sense in a kind of a gray area because it's controlled by this rogue nation that calls itself a caliphate that's been declared completely illegitimate by Muslim clerics, that sort of thing.
I think the key to enforcement there is trying to make sure it's squeezing the money in particular and trying to make sure that funds and assets that they've already seized are controlled where possible, but crucially trying to stop some of the further income flows that might feed into the group. And that's particularly from commodity smuggling in the area.
Including oil sales, those kinds of things.
Absolutely. So the reality is that the more you can squeeze the money, the less danger we have from what is this toxic mix today, an unprecedented volume and range of foreign terrorist fighters, the continuing toxic nature of al-Qaeda-related ideology and inspiration to generate attacks, and potentially the money to support it. And that's a pretty nasty mix, and that's why I think there's been such a concerted international effort to try and tackle this.
Interesting discussion. Alexander Evans is the coordinator of the United Nations Security Council Analytics Support and Sanctions Monitoring Team. Quite a mouthful there. Alexander Evans, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
At the beginning of the hour, I quoted Usama Jamal, Secretary General of the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, commenting on a letter signed by scores of Muslim clerics around the world who have condemned the Islamic State and taken issue with their notion of being an Islamic anything. Secretary General Jamal joins me now. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
What do you hope the impact of this letter will be, and who is the intended audience? I mean, ISIS certainly, but the other Muslims around the world, I would think.
Well, yes, certainly ISIS is the main target to understand that the Muslim around the world do not agree with their ideology, do not agree with their actions, do not agree with the methods that they have used, and that they have violated every tenet of Islamic teachings and law. And also that we hope from this message around the world for Muslims to know that Muslim leadership and scholars do not condone what ISIS did. And we hope that that they do not believe the claims that they are trying to make.
The Islamic world is not organized the same way as, say, the Catholic Church. There's no way that clerics can collectively excommunicate someone like Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi or something like that. Is that possible?
Well, it is possible today with social media, today with all kind of form of communications, there is. And the Council of Scholars also known, and al-Baghdadi knows it very well. So when a statement comes from such high scholars, they will get the message as far as the ISIS is concerned.
Again, I don't want to play fast and loose with Islamic tenets here, but we've just been talking with someone from the United Nations about the possibility of criminalizing actually being a member of one of these organizations like ISIS. Is it possible for the Sunni clerical leadership to issue fatwas-specific sanctions against anyone who would consider helping ISIS on any level, and that they would be banished from their own congregations, their own mosques, if they attempted to do such a thing, you know, to give a letter like this teeth?
Well, it is already in the Islamic law. I mean, you don't need to enact something that is already there. Now, the recruitments that once in a while happen, it was not under the ISIS as we see it today. It was that the people, for instance, in Syria facing this the regime who's killing their own people and probably joined them on good faith. But I hope now they understand that this ISIS is taking advantage of them and they are doing criminal activities, and no one should really be falling prey to their propaganda anymore.
Do you believe that in the Islamic world, on any level, there is a group of people who are on the fence about ISIS, who are sort of tacitly tolerating something that you believe should be wiped out and that a message needs to get to them? Or are you satisfied that the consensus in the Islamic world is absolutely opposed to ISIS at this point?
I believe there is a consensus that they oppose ISIS at this point. From an Islamic standpoint, they know that they have violated every Islamic law. and whatever, whoever is maybe arguing on their behalf, it is from political standpoints. Unfortunately, the Syrian people been left for 4 years. Chemical weapons used against them. Nobody paid any attention. After 4 years, we found out that somebody else took advantage of the situation, recruited the vulnerable, and now we're trying to come back and see what we want to do for the Syrians. A little too late, but I hope not far too late. We can still remedy the situation.
All right, the last question. What if al-Baghdadi, and I can't put words in his mouth necessarily, but I've heard some of his statements and some of the statements of people in ISIS. I mean, one of his response to your letter is, oh, that Osama Jamal, brainwashed by the infidels, look at this stupid letter. We'll kill him like the rest. What would your reaction be?
Well, I mean, saying about brainwashed, I think he has a brain damage. So I would not be surprised if he claimed that we are being washed or we're following Westerners or this or that. I would not be surprised if they're going to accuse us. I don't be surprised if they put us on a hit list. But I think the truth has to come out and a strong position has to be stated. And we're not afraid.
Osama Jamal is Secretary General of the U.S. Council of Muslim Organizations, one of the signers of a letter by more than 120 Muslim clerics around the world, a point-by-point refutation of the tenets of ISIS. So, Osama Jamal, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.